Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Everyone, and welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of Syosset Library. I'm your host today, Jen, and I'm here with the writer of an absolutely enthralling and engaging novella that I could not put down. Could I please ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Absolutely. My name is Zach Rosenberg, and I am the author of Hungers as Old as This Land.
Ugh, such a good title. Could you talk a little bit first, about where that title came from? Because it's so good.
Certainly. This actually started as a short story, and my idea for theme was kind of, the violence of the West, manifest destiny, the hunger for profit and expansion, and contrasting that to the more, primal hungers of, spoiler alert, the monsters in the novel, or the novella, and basically how that contrasted, and the idea of greed being such an old hunger that it really, that has always been there as long as there's been land to exploit by things like manifest destiny and colonialism, that it really just kind of flowed from there. Originally, it was going to be what built this land, but I wasn't really happy with that. So eventually I settled on hungers as old as this land, and the expansion really just happened from there.
Nice. Yeah, it is. It's really remarkable how you fit so much story into a very tight package. It's remarkably efficient, and it's very captivating. It's very hard to put down. But before we get into the book too much, could you talk a little bit perhaps about your journey to writing? Were you a fan of horror first or of Westerns? And how did these things come together for you? What brought you to this project?
Definitely. I was really into horror since I was a kid. I really got into it when I was really little. I think I must have been somewhere between 7 and 10. I can't remember which when I first got into one of them. I think it came from Beneath the Sink, and then I was just getting all the kid horror books I could get my hands on. I got a little older and I was getting more of them. And I would just always love to kind of make up stories in my head. I really kind of stopped writing for a little while, for quite a long time actually, just because I just kind of fell off it. And I really got back into it a few years ago. Probably 2017, 2018, I started writing my own stuff again, and just doing various things there, and going, and from there, it was last year was when I really decided I was going to start writing and submitting, and it really started working out a little.
Nice. Very quickly too. You've had just from following you on Twitter for a little while, you've had a bunch of really exciting announcements in what seems like a pretty short amount of time. And yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in your career and in this book. So let's talk about it. Could we start maybe a little bit with the main characters? Because I love Esther and Siobhan so much, and their relationship is really lovely. And I also love the way that they both relate to the father. Could you talk a little bit about where this trio of characters came from and how you sort of developed their dynamic?
Absolutely. Really, it really came down to an idea of, I wanted characters who represented diversity in the Old West, characters who would be marginalized. I really wanted to tell some stories about, because I'm Jewish and I love, and I love Jewish horror and Jewish fiction and Jewish fantasy. I want to tell those stories about, Jewish people in the West, who don't really get mentioned that much. And I had the idea of also, of Esther being half Jewish, half Indigenous, because I really wanted that representation in there. I really wanted to portray that as well as I could, but also, not to appropriate an Indigenous story and Indigenous folklore and Indigenous history, because I didn't feel that was my place to tell. But I also wanted, with Siobhan, also I wanted a character who was Jewish, who could, Esther is born Jewish, and, her descent of Judaism is patrilineal, which would be unconventional in some places. There's actually some controversy about that in Jewish communities, because the very traditional side is matrilineal. So she would have been raised a little unconventionally in that faith through her father. And Siobhan is a convert, but she's never treated as anything but Jewish. And I wanted to, show that once someone has converted, they are, for all intents and purposes, 100% Jewish. And in fact, Jewish law, the halakha, says that You are actually not even supposed to ever bring up there was a time they weren't Jewish at that point. And also Siobhan is someone, you know, she's the daughter of an Irish immigrant, and she is someone who would be considered on, once again, on the lower rung of the ladder, but not to the same extent as others. And that kind of feeds into kind of her devil may care outlook. She sometimes takes a few things for granted, that she kind of forgets that Esther has more to worry about than she does. Their father, Abraham, I really wanted a character who was, honestly, just a good father, a caring person, someone who tries to do the best for his community, who is not perfect and doesn't have all the answers, but has a lot of secrets at the same time, who's very good at making deals because he has apparently, worked out something with unconventional creatures nearby. And also, it meant a lot for me to portray him as a former Union soldier because a lot of times in the American Westerns, I kind of grew up, I never really kind of got into a lot of like the John Wayne Westerns. There was just something about them I never really cared for. And so many of them kind of like promoted the, like so many of those Westerns from the time period promoted the idea of the noble Confederate, like the doomed lost cause. And that just never sat right to me. So I really, it was really when I got into spaghetti Westerns a little later on that I really kind of started loving Westerns for what they were and what they could be, like the Gothic Westerns, the revisionist Westerns, the more left-leaning ones, the more kind of brutal ones in a sense, like Fistful of Dollars blew me away, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, The Great Silence. And I really wanted to portray a character who was, an unapologetic Union soldier, who was someone who had fought for the North, who believed in ending slavery. And someone who was also, like I said, just a very loving father who was supportive of his daughter. Obviously Esther and Siobhan are a couple, and it's a very, not very accepting time. I didn't really want to go into the homophobia too much there because I felt it would detract a little from kind of the anti-Semitism and the racism at the time. And obviously I only had so many pages to work with, but I kind of had the idea of, there are people in the village who don't understand it or might not approve of it, but they're still, they still don't really say much because Esther is the leader, is the, leader's daughter. And also, they're just able to kind of bluff and bribe their way out of, any innkeepers who wonder why they're sharing a room or anything. So it was really important for me to portray that, just kind of caring relationships all around. I really just came up with the characters after some consideration, and I just really loved writing them. I just really have a blast with them as characters. They really just kind of grew on me as I went.
Yeah, they're really wonderful, and their relationships all feel very lived in and real, you know? And something that I found particularly fascinating, this is going to seem totally irrelevant at first, but I promise it will go back to something meaningful.
Go ahead.
So before I became a librarian, I studied medieval history, and I worked on women's intercultural and interreligious interactions, because women actually tended to interact more across like religious and ethnic lines than men did, because like women, did errands outside the house, like, shopping for food and, interacting with other women and stuff like that. And so it did feel very real too, that these women would come together for survival, especially in places like, the Western frontier that were sort of on the edge of society, where perhaps there was like a little bit more permissiveness or ability to kind of like live on the edges of things and not really like, call too much attention to yourselves. So I love that was like a very long intro to this question, which is, could you talk a little bit about like, yeah, how the setting maybe like affects their relationship and like the horror that's all at the edges of this too? Because Weston is, I think, like Westerns are a very fertile area for horror, and there've been some really good ones, but like not a ton. And so I just love the combination of that two genres. So you could talk about like what setting is doing here for our characters and like for the story.
Absolutely. It's funny you mentioned that because one of my little pet peeves is when people use the historical excuse to portray, characters or women with no, or minorities or women with no agency. That's always bothered me because I consider it like extremely ahistorical because women have always been doing things in history. Women in, from way back, even if obviously I'm not going to portray them as egalitarian paradises, but in the Middle Ages, women worked. They helped with businesses. They were, women rulers. And part of the setting for me was it was very important for me to portray the people who are traditionally portrayed with less power and giving them more of it. Like I love The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I love Once Upon a Time in the West. It's a movie I really adore. And Jill in that movie is probably one of my favorite characters. But I think, Sergio Leone did have kind of a misogynist bent, and that does come across a little in the movie, where she is a former sex worker that's kind of treated as a dark secret in her past. At one point, she is raped by the villain, and she is extremely strong. She gets beyond it, but it does reflect a bit of a problem with that. I wanted to portray these characters as basically people who had agency despite that time period. And I find the West a very, very, very fertile ground for horror because there's so much to it. There's so much horrible things happening in the West. There's manifest destiny. There's racism, there's discrimination, labor disputes, you have unchecked capitalism. And I've seen some really good Western horror. I think, probably the best, probably one of the best books I've read on that is Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy, which I will say is absolutely a horror book. It is just like the purest, rawest form of human violence. One of my all-time favorites that I really took some liberty, some cues from as well. Ravenous is one of my favorite horror movies. That is just, I that's a great Western. It is like, I think, like I've heard, it kind of butchers the native myths and a little bit of history, but that movie has no right to be as good as it is. Guy Pearce, Robert Carlyle, they're just like, it's even better when you realize they're basically improving everything, and it's just a movie that shouldn't work and just totally does. But it's the idea of like this whole westward expansion, this whole we are just going to take everything, we are going to despoil everything we find, we are going to eliminate people who were here, we are going to set up these areas that basically operate on their own, their own law systems. And I've really seen it done, very, very, very well in other places. There's some good, Weird West things I've read. Like I grew up reading comics too. Like I loved Jonah Hex, and like some of the Weird West tales were always a lot of fun. There was one relatively recent one called The Burrowers, which was
Oh,
in,
yes.
it's like it's a little hokey, but it's like the idea of like the vicious drive and the Western expansion has killed like all the buffalo, which these monsters that live underground would normally prey on. So now they're preying on mankind instead. It's really like those ideas that really gave me the thought of it. And I just love the Weird West and everything. But I had the idea of like, what if the creatures are contrasted to like the more vicious greed of mankind and that sort of violence. That was something that was really important for me to portray. Like kind of the West, don't shy away from its more brutal aspects. Don't shy away from the nastiness. Because like when the villain in his first scene in The Present is introduced, essentially they're mercenaries and they're slaughtering a group of unionizers who want to, who want safer working conditions for the bankers. And that's stuff that actually happened. They like I think that when you have monsters and everything, I think what I was trying to aim for in the setting was basically to give them that contrast.
That is so interesting. I'm really glad that you brought up the human villain here, because Cyril's a great character. I mean, he's unconscionable, but he's a great
To the
character.
core.
Yeah, he's very entertaining, and you really love to hate him. And I think you do a really good job of, the people are always worse, in these stories than the supernatural thing. And I think there's a really cool contrast there too, because like right off the bat, I don't want to give too much away about like what's going on here, but like there is the implication though that like the Hungers, like there's an agreement there. They can abide by agreements, which means that they have like values and principles and things, and they can but Cyril does not. He's a mercenary and a Pinkerton too, right? Like, which is awful. And so he is a lot less civilized than the other forces at work in this story. So how do you kind of balance like the human horror and the creature horror?
It's basically I take one to kind of support the other. The idea that it's kind of human hunger that feeds into to the creatures from the hungers, like the contrast between them. The creatures from the hungers, once again, without giving anything away, they can be reasoned with. They are not mindless monsters. They do have their own codes, but they are still remnants of a very dangerous society and a dangerous land. And even, even when they're functioning as protectors, it's kind of implied, the heroes do not really want them around, and they're actually kind of scared because they can't really control them. It's only like their sense of propriety that keeps them in line. Like, these things are fast, they're strong, they're very dangerous, and there's only really so much you can do to control them. On the other hand, Cyril is someone who can only be controlled if you're paying him. Like, the idea of, just my idea was, when I had him in mind, I really had him, when I kind of cast him in my head, I really thought of Richard Brake when I was writing all his dialogue. Like, that slow drawl, that, like, really, like, he was just the actor I really had in my head there. Sometimes I'm able to cast him, sometimes I'm not. But, Cyril is someone who would be like a great guy to go out for a drink with. He would, he would probably buy you rounds, be a lot of fun to talk to. And if there was even like $10 in it for him, he'd cut your throat and never think twice about it. Like, Cyril is a character who I think is, an effective horror villain. I actually had a lot of people comment on Cyril in some reviews, basically saying, like, this guy is very human, but he's just like such a bad person. He has like all these reasons to be grateful to these people. He has all these reasons and all these considerations of time. He just kind of like almost seems like he could be a better person and then goes back on it. And I just really, really love that. Like, the idea of, like, this is a guy who, he'll be hired by someone super wealthy who you cannot possibly match the price of, and his job is to just make you disappear, like you never existed. The idea of, if you never, if you ever, even if he owes you a favor, then that's, completely negotiable. He'll just take that and use that as a bargaining tool elsewhere. And he's someone who, it might be a little ahistorical, but I really wanted to make sure that Cyril was not a very, racist or sexist or even anti-Semitic person. He's kind of beyond that. Like, he just sees everyone as a potential for a profit. Like, he does, like, I'm sure that he does, obviously he would hold some of the prejudices of the day, but he makes it very clear everything there is secondary to money. And why does he want the money? Just because he wants it. He can't explain it. It's just something that's part of him. And that, he's, basically, I mean, also made it clear he's not a very abusive boss. He's a good, he, like, I think when I portray him as a leader, he's a relatively good one. Like, he's not into just randomly abusing his men. He's not, he's make sure everyone gets to share the profits. There's no altruism to it. Everything he does is just calculated, and you can just attach dollar signs to his eyes, and it wouldn't change anything else about him.
And that is, like, to me, scarier in a way than like an outright racist or bigot or something, because at least like when somebody has an ideology, they can like be predicted to some extent, like if you don't believe in anything and just money, like that there's no way to sort of like grapple with that. It makes them very scary, and like you find yourself as a reader like, yeah, feeling very torn about like being terrified of him, but also just like finding him immensely entertaining at the same time. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about like how you in this book, in a very short span, because I keep saying book, but it is a novella. You have a lot of really good character work. Like the story has a lot of heart, but there's like a lot of really good like slick action plotting too. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about like how you approach action as opposed to character, and how do you create like the balance of that?
It's, I find that the best action takes place when you care about the characters who are involved in it. Like, the first scene is, I try to use it, is, the first scene in the book is a flashback to Antietam, which is Cyril and Esther's father, Abraham, when they're in the same foxhole together. That was something, obviously I'm using that to introduce the characters, but I'm using that to introduce the characters, to get their mindsets, to get their characters through that, to kind of make you, get basically so the reader gets to know them, and also they don't know what to expect. Basically, it's introducing the idea that Cyril owes Abraham his life, but also introducing the idea that Cyril is very wily as well. And then, I think it's all a matter of pacing in that sense, like some quiet drama scenes after that, character development. and action when it's appropriate. You know, keep I'm someone who writes. I kind of like to, you know, what's called pantsing, obviously. I like to, you know, I sit down, I have some ideas of where I want to go, but I'll just kind of like figure it out as I get there. And, you know, Rath James White once said that, you know, he likes to kind of do the same thing, but he likes to keep himself excited when he's writing. Like, you know, so I want to keep it exciting for myself too. Like, I'll throw in like maybe, you know, a fun little action scene there. Like, there's a scene where when the ladies are visiting town, and Esther and, you know, Siobhan's idea of fun is go off and get into just a random boxing match. So I just kind of threw that in there, and I'm like, wait, you know, this is fun because, you know, it's an action scene, but also it's telling you about Siobhan as a character. She's devil may care. She's risky. She likes fighting. She's also very skilled. And it shows Esther's reaction to and after it. So it allowed me to say, you know, that's something that can't, you know, it shows their reactions and it helps build that. And it also helps the reader care about them. So when the dangers actually happen, that, you know, I'm hoping the reader is more invested there all the way to the end, where, you know, now it's the confrontation, now it's the, you know, the final battles, now, like, you know, the horror is happening, like, you know, hopefully you're on the edge of your seat, there's that suspense that's leading up to it. And, you know, now I've built the characters up enough that you actually care what's happening to them, that you're cheering for Esther and Siobhan when they're going up against Cyril and the Blackhawks, or, you know, you're worried for them when the creatures from the Hungers are around, and, you know, all basically based on that. And, you know, I just have a lot of fun with it. And also, you know, writing the I also just love writing, you know, the dialogue between them. You know, the sometimes some action scenes don't allow so much for dialogue, but I try to, you know, dialogue between them as authentic as possible, as, you know, kind of get into their heads, like, how would two people who have been in a relationship essentially their entire lives, you know, one another, how would, like, they would obviously be very comfortable with one another. Esther has obviously seen Siobhan fight before and has no, you know, and has no doubt she's good at it. On the other hand, you know, the way Cyril talks to his men and the way Cyril talks to other people and how the fighting goes, and how the fighting, you know, goes between Cyril and, you know, without spoiling anything, the fight he has with Abraham and his people. And, you know, I just basically I have a lot of fun using that to develop the characters and the setting. So it's all really a matter of just knowing when to throw something in and make sure the stakes are there.
That's really interesting because, I was thinking as I was reading this that, like, it's like this kind of like there are stakes that are present, but they are like if you compare it to like sort of, like Hollywood action blockbuster filmmaking, like the stakes there are always so high as to be like sort of unimaginable or like you can't really connect with them because it's always like fate of the universe, and like in a lot of those fights, you can sort of probably slot out any given person and slot in a different one, and the fight still kind of like makes sense and the motivations and things. There's something about like this kind of small scale action where you really do see like not only is the character determining like how they approach the fight and what they do and what choices they make, but then that like the fight and outcome then have implications for character development, and affect how they go. How they act going forward. And it just feels like it's a much more organic approach to action than I think you see in a lot of modern stuff. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's also kind of, you know, one thing I also wanted to consider was the different ways they would fight. Like, you know, what are their characters? What are their styles? What, you know, I introduced the idea that Abraham was a, you know, Abraham was a boxer and he taught Siobhan. How would they, you know, f like how would they fight against this opponent? Like, I remember one thing I had is a lot of the fights don't even last that long. They're just very, you know, brief and brutal, and you try to make sure you put the other person down and make sure they stay down.
Yeah, that makes total sense, because I think like in modern fights you do see a lot of people like throwing people across the room and stuff, and it's like that doesn't accomplish anything, like people usually want these things to end as fast as possible. So it felt very real. Yeah, I enjoyed this book so much, and I really can't wait to see what you do next. And I know it's often difficult to talk about, what's on the horizon, but do you have anything that you're in the works or that you're working on that you can speak to a little bit?
Absolutely, I would love to, actually. I do have a few things that are signed for now that I can talk about. There's three more books that I have that are signed for that are coming up relatively soon. One is coming up actually next month. My publisher just put out a trailer for it. It's with Off Limits Press, who have done amazing books like Hayley Piper's The Worm and His Kings and the recent sequel,
Yes.
Laurel Hightower's Crossroads, J.W. McCarthy's Sleep Alone. book by Tim McGregor and Caitlin Carpenter, amazing publisher. I've really been honored and humbled to work with them. They put out a call for a pulp line, and one of my pitches was accepted, and the book has been signed for. It is coming out next month. It is a Jewish pulp detective horror novel called The Long Shalom.
Nice. That's
So
fantastic. Oh
thank you.
my
They it is now up for pre-order. We just got the pre-order link up. We have the book trailer is up. It is the cover was recently released, and it is there might be a few little Easter eggs and hunger in there. I'm not really sure if I should call them Easter eggs with the Jewish connection, but yeah, no, I'm really excited about that. It's about a Jewish detective in Prohibition era, and people are going missing in New York City. People the cops wouldn't usually miss, and he is contacted by his old flame, who knocks on the door one night, and she contracts him for a job to find some missing folks. And he ends up with like an old team of his who are all, minorities of various stripes and various stripes and sorts to get to the bottom of it. And there's cosmic horror and things that aren't quite human.
Ooh.
And I have it might be November. We might be delaying it a bit for some other stuff, but it is a Jewish pirate horror novel with Darklit Press, which I have just finished and turned in, so I'll be editing it soon,
Nice.
called Devils and the Deep Blue Sea, set during the Golden Age of Piracy.
Ooh.
And it is, I would pitch that as a mix between The Vigil, Evil Dead, and Black Sails,
Ooh.
where you have ghosts of, wrath. You have like a whole pirate crew worth of Dybbuk who are hunting a Jewish sailor along the waves for revenge and also to unlock like the dark secrets of the depths. And I have one other that we should be releasing next year with the same publisher from Hungers, which is a like a Jewish gothic horror novel called The Unquiet Grave, which I kind of pitched as Carmilla meets The Vigil meets Crimson Peak.
Oh my gosh, these are also great.
So thank you.
Great.
It is a Jewish woman who is fresh out of Paris, who has just married a count, and she arrives at his new estate, and things seem happy, except there is a creature that is haunting the grounds, who she turns out to have a lot in common with.
Oh wow. It's really cool to see. I look forward to reading all of these because I am really looking forward to see the Jewish perspective work through all these genres. And especially, I'm so glad that you mentioned The Vigil twice because I love The Vigil. Like, that was so good.
There hasn't been a Jewish horror movie like it, like before or after. I like, there's a lot of really good ones, like, well, not a lot, but I would recommend seeing 2018's The Golem if you haven't. I recommend seeing Attachment was good. But The Vigil is, that's when you that's like what happens when you take someone who like really like that's a movie with like almost completely a Jewish team, and that like just really showed like when they show like the like the let's get serious moment where he's rapping to fill in, I was like, oh my God, this is my movie. And that was a big that was a big influence on me. That one like was really like my Jewish horror thing. I absolutely love that movie too.
So cool. Well, thank you again so much for coming to talk to us. I am so excited for the world to read this book and all the ones that are coming. And, if in the fall, if you want to come back to talk about this Gothic book, you're welcome back because that sounds really fabulous too.
I'd absolutely love to. I would also mention, if anyone wants to check it out, I also have one other gothic horror one, which just came out in Diet Milk magazine, called The Blackest Heart, which is about a Jewish countess in the I forget which century, but it's in like pre-unification Italy, where she is married to a handsome count, and she learns he is leading an evil cult that is trying to summon a demon, and she is left to basically figure her way out of it, and her maid seems to have some secrets. And it was really sweet. Diet Milk actually sent me a message saying, hey, we love your story. Would you like to do sequels to it? And we will happily serialize that. And I was like, absolutely. So I have that coming.
Oh wow, that sounds cool too. Well, yeah, you are welcome to come back and discuss any and all of these. They all sound fabulous. Thank you so much.
I would absolutely love it. I'll be happy to send you an arc of a Long Shalom as well.
Yay, thank you.
My absolute pleasure.
All right, listeners, please pick up this book, Hunger's as Old as This Land. is absolutely fantastic. And by the time that you hear this, it will be available. So please, please seek it out. This has been Jen. It's been lovely having you, and I'll see y'all next time. It's time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.